be bold and be brave and just go for it.
As photographers, we are always looking for powerful images that will hold time and place, that will draw people in and symbolize something universal, something shared, something emotional.
Everybody needs to see what's going on everywhere. Pictures just stand out. This is how we remember.
Insights, kits, and the conversations that matter with the world's leading photographers and filmmakers in Shutter Stories. The R3 is the most advanced professional EOS camera to date, combining some of the best features of the EOS 1 series and the EOS R5. It delivers groundbreaking speed and cutting-edge autofocus. And we're marking the launch of this flagship camera with an exclusive episode that explores and dives a little deeper into the camera's main features. Welcome to Shutter Stories with me, your host, Lucy Hedges. Now, shortly, we'll be talking to Canon Ambassador Vladimir Rees and Richard Heathcote from Getty Images about their experiences of using the new camera in the field. But first, we're joined by Mike Burnhill, a European Senior Product Specialist at Canon Europe. Now, Mike knows the R3 inside and out and knows everything there is to know and is, of course, a regular voice here on Shutter Stories. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi, Lucy.
Hey, how are you?
Good, very good.
Excellent. Now, everyone's had some time to digest the specification and capabilities of the R3. So perhaps we can start with a brief overview of this absolute powerhouse of a camera. You know, how significant is it and what were the goals for its development?
Oh, it's a quite significant product for Canon because at the heart of it is the new sensor, the back illuminated stack sensor, which really is taking our sensor technology to another level, which then opens up more doors for the future. So that's one of the key things for us, is to be able to produce technology which will again filter down on other products in the future. But this is the kind of the start of a new era for sort of the Canon sort of a mirrorless sort of cameras, really, to really reduce that gap between traditional DSLRs and mirrorless cameras, and to have something that is that users from both sides can feel comfortable with.
Yeah, so it's all, you know, creating this hybrid camera experience.
Yeah, it's not so much hybrid, but actually the two very demanding kind of users who have certain requirements, and up to now either side have fallen short. You know, the mirrorless users want to shoot video, DSLRs aren't great for that, and the viewfinder experience in mirrorless cameras haven't been great, so DSLRs prefer their DSLRs. And it's slowly taking those two, all the advantage of both of these systems, and producing a camera that can do both of these jobs, you know, perfectly.
Yeah. So can we dive into some of the main features? You just mentioned the back illuminated stack sensor. You know, it's taking, you know, photography to another level. What's the story behind the new sensor? Can we dive a little deeper into that?
Yeah, well, again, sensors, you know, have been around for a long time. So moving forward, you know, to eliminate some of the issues, the sensors have always struggled to, you know, do two jobs. So be a sensor and a shutter. So traditionally, we've always had a mechanical shutter and the sensors. So this camera is designed to allow us to use the benefits of the electronic shutter, which have been the silent shooting, low vibrations, etc. But then there's all the negative sides, which were, you know, there was more rolling shutter, you couldn't use it with flash, and to basically eliminate those issues now. So therefore, mechanical shutter is used less and less, and the sensor can take the images with more dynamic range than before, but also offer all those mirrorless benefits of the silent shooting and the higher frame rates, and most importantly for the two guys we're going to talk to later on, is reduce that rolling shutter, so there's less kind of jello effect, and things aren't like, you know, Vlad's cars don't look like they're from Wacky Races with all the skewed wheels, etc.
Yeah, so we're talking about a very, very exciting update or a feature to the camera.
It's amazing. Some of the most important things are the little features, like I say, that rolling shutter distortion means, you know, for these two guys, that or as they're going through all their images, they're looking at all the great images, and then they go, I can't, that's a great image, I've got the timing, but everything's a bit, you know, the football's more like an egg, or the wheels on the car are wrong. So you although you've got the perfect moment, you lose some of these great images because they're not quite right. And where they are three with this rolling shutter means not only are they getting the 30 frames per second, they're getting more shots, that all those shots are usable. Basically, it just gives them more choices, more desirable images, which makes their life a lot easier. In some ways, harder because they have too much choice.
Is there such thing as too much choice?
In a cake shop, sometimes, yes.
Okay, now the headline specification is, you know, this remarkable top speed of 30 frames per second. So kind of venturing almost into video territory here. So what I want to know is, can the camera continue to focus and make exposure adjustments for each shot at this speed?
Yes, the camera is not only is it able to focus, it actually checks the focusing twice between each frame. So it actually checks the focusing at 60 frames per second. You'll get full metering mode. Even the bit depth doesn't drop at 30 frames a second. You still get 14-bit raw. So again, eliminating all the little small caveats that in the past that we had and other competitors that had, that yes, you could achieve these great numbers, but you had to read the small print. With the R3, we're trying to eliminate that small print. And when you get 30 frames a second, it's exactly the same as if you're using a mechanical shutter at 12 frames a second or 30 frames a second. There's less negative sides actually using this feature. It's a fully functional 30 frames a second.
Yeah, wow. And how else has the autofocus been improved?
The autofocus has been totally redone. Basically, we've started almost from scratch and rebuilt the whole system. So now the choice of what AF group and using face tracking and spot is now possible. Before, it was an auto tracking mode. Now you can use any of the AF modes, any selection system that you want to. You can combine that with now with the people, the animals, including bird that we had before. We've now added vehicle tracking as well, that does for motorsports. All these all intersecting into each other to, you know, really enhance that AF system as well. And the AF speed has been improved as well. So now we're kind of down to like 0.03 seconds of, you know, for focusing. So it's nearly half the speed, or twice as fast as the R5 is to focusing. The R5 was a 0.05. This is 0.3. So there's lots of small tweaks to the AF that makes it much more desirable and easier to use and adaptable for different situations.
Well, I think that's the important thing here, isn't it? What you just said, adaptable to different situations, giving people lots of AF options to suit their shooting conditions.
Yeah, again, what we see with this product is people are coming from a DSLR and how they've used the camera in one way. And then there are people stepping up from, say, an R5 or other mirrorless cameras, and they expect the AF to work in a different way. And what we're trying to do is give them, both these users, the best of both worlds, that they can get this amazing eye and face tracking that you see with mirrorless cameras, but also have that familiarity of a DSLR, that you have the your single point AF system. And what's great about the R3 is you can actually do both at the same time. You can have your single point and your tracking, as many of the photographers have done for years. That's how they kind of use it. But then at the touch of a button, or, you know, slide of a switch, basically I've got full face tracking. So they've got full control when they want to and override, but they've also got the benefit and the real ease of use of mirrorless cameras, where they can concentrate on taking the photograph and not what they're focusing on.
Yeah, but obviously the big, so handy in the field.
Yeah, I suppose what the big thing to lead into that is that, Lucy, we were talking about the eye control, I suppose.
Talk us through how it works. It is an unbelievably awesome feature, but let's hear from you how it works.
Yeah, well, basically the how it works and what it does, you know, are kind of two separate things. And one's slightly boring and one's amazing. But the basically the technology is basically there are eight sort of infrared little lights sensors around the eyepiece, and that basically for different eyes, different glasses, different distances, and it actually creates almost like a fingerprint of your eye. So you need to kind of calibrate it a few times in different conditions, bright light, dark light, you know, indoors, vertical, and basically that way you can adapt to your eye in different situations much better. You know, a single calibration will be okay, but the more you calibrate it, the more accurate it becomes, because it can recognize your eye in different. And therefore, but what it's doing is actually tracking where you're looking. And what is important to remember with the system is it's not about being super precise about looking and it being millimeter accurate. It's about working with the other AF systems, the smart, you know, subject tracking. So because you know what you want to focus on, and you don't have to look at the eye, you just have to look at the person, and then the other part of the system, the smart system that recognizes subjects, knows at that person, and then we'll track their eye for you, or their face, whatever is available. So it's basically, you know, the human brain knows in a group of people which is the most important of that group of people to focus on. You know, the camera will never know until you've programmed it so it recognizes, you know, weddings and stuff like that. You know, it just sees a group of people, and there's, say there's five people, there's 10 eyes. Which of those 10 eyes do I focus on? And it's a random thing. But you as a person know instinctively almost, you know, which of those 10, five people is the most important. You know, it could be the bride, it could be the groom, it could be a celebrity on a red carpet, it could be the team captain. You know, it could be lots of different things. But the human brain and eyes are very good at that, but the camera isn't. And what this eye control really does is intersecting between your brain and the camera much, much quicker than you having to move your thumb around to move a little air point or drag. If you just look instinctively, then the camera knows that person, and then it can kick in with its subject tracking and will track that person for you. And then you concentrate on taking the photograph, you know, the framing, composition, the timing. They're more, you know, technically more important that they make the shot than, you know, than you having to fiddle around with the AF point. And it also allows you just to quickly move between different subjects. You know, if there's a subject on the left, subject on the right, you can actually be focusing on an object, a subject, and then be looking what's going on in the background. And when you want to, you can quickly move to that background rather than have to swipe around with the joysticks, etc. You can instinctively kind of make the AF point move from one point to another, and then the subject tracking kicks in and chooses the accurate point for you. It's not about you choosing, you know, millimeter perfect, because the human eye can't do that. It's always kind of scanning a scene. So it's the two AF technologies working together, one looking at your eye and the other one at the front of the camera, always looking at the subject eyes.
Wow, such an incredible feature. I think the great thing about it is, like you mentioned, it reduces that time to focus or kind of fiddle around with buttons, and for kind of a natural and speedy control, and to maybe basically just focus on the job at hand.
I would say what the most instinctive thing we do in the world is look at something. And that's what this is doing. It's that it becomes selecting where to focus becomes so instinctive, because it is natural. It's how we look at the world. We look at something and then the camera focuses where you look. It's super, super simple.
Such an incredible feature. Now, the R3 inherits the EOS 1DX Mark III smart controller for selecting AF points, doesn't it? Is that right?
It does, yeah. So we've kind of to keep the, as I said earlier on, we have people coming from mirrorless cameras and DSLRs. So we've tried to keep the interface sort of as similar as possible. You know, the eye control system is wonderful, but it may not suit everybody. You know, it may take a while to get used to.
Yes, of course.
So you have very similar controls to what they're used to on other cameras. And one of the benefits of the One Series is if you take an EOS, if you were kind of frozen in a... in 1989 with the EOS 1, and then you woke up and were defrosted and you were presented with a 1DX Mark III, you could almost use it straight away, because the controls are very similar. They're a logical evolution, and that's what we're doing in the R3. The controls are an evolution of what's gone before. So it becomes, again, the camera is a tool, and basically people have to be comfortable using it and know we don't want to change things around all the time. They need to not look at the camera. They're looking through the viewfinder or the screen to take the shot, not looking at the camera to where the buttons are to press. It has to be very instinctive. But also, it's great with the smart control. Now it's been enhanced as well. It's easy when you do lock onto one eye and it is the wrong eye, perhaps you can just swipe the smart control and it will move to the other eyes, and you can actually just use your thumb to move between people as well. If you're not using the eye tracking system.
Yeah. Well, I guess going back to what you were saying about that familiarity, I think that's so important, isn't it? You know, if people are going to be making that move to a new camera, they don't want to be turned off by something that they're not familiar with, or the buttons are completely foreign to them. So I think that's such a fantastic feature that you've just mentioned.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people don't have the money to dump all their systems and buy two of everything. You know, often we will see that they go through a hybrid mode where they'll have one of two types of cameras, that old camera that they're familiar with and a new camera, and they'll slowly transition over to the new camera once they're happy, and then maybe get a second of that one. It's not, so we want to have a system that they can go between the two. And again, we try to make the card similar. The battery is similar to the 1DX, therefore cutting down on your chargers, you know, cutting down on your card readers. These are all important things for these guys. It's like less things to pack. If they all have, you know, the same charger, the same card readers, the same cards, that's a lot less cables and faffing around when you're trying to get all the stuff ready. You know, you have a simpler kit bag.
Yeah, which is so important when you're on the move, right?
Totally. Yeah, because it always just takes you to have not bring the right cable, and suddenly you can't download images, you know.
Nightmare, which no one wants to go through. So let's talk about lenses. There've been two new lenses launched alongside the R3, right? So two new affordable lenses to the lineup. So we've got the RF 100 to 400 f 5.6 to 8 ISUSM. Let's get my breath back. So this is a new super lightweight, super telephoto zoom lens for wildlife and sport photography, right? And then we have the RF 60mm f2.8 STM, which is an ultra wide prime lens that's perfect for landscapes, architecture and the night sky and beyond. Whew. So let's start with the first one, the RF 100 to 400. How does that fit into the lineup?
That's really a sort of a consumer lens. So they're obviously, we've added the R3, which is for the professionals, but we want to expand the RFN range of cameras and lenses to a wider range of customers. It's not just all about professionals. So we want to make low cost lenses that people can whether they're stepping into photography use. So your Canon EOS RP user might want a telephoto lens, and up to now the options have been quite expensive. We've only really had L series lenses. So to have a long lens, which is good for wildlife or sports, etc., it's lightweight and low cost, is a fantastic kind of addition to the range, and that allows people to kind of slowly move into photography and try this stuff out before they buy a new camera, etc., or step up into becoming professionals. You have to have a lens that's affordable for different price ranges. And this is a great lens. And I think one of the things about that is the apertures. And in the old days, we were kind of stuck with setting the aperture ranges because the AF systems were limited on DSLRs, that you needed certain brightness values to get the light into the lens. But with these newer mirrorless cameras like the RP, that the fact that you can focus down to f22, means that the aperture doesn't have to stay, fast. Therefore, the lens can be made smaller or longer in this case. So we've managed to squeeze, 100 to 400 in the same size as 70 to 300, and actually have it lighter weight. So enhance the performance. And obviously, some people might say the negative side about the aperture, but the aperture was always a requirement to make it possible to autofocus. People didn't want a lens for the autofocus camera that wouldn't autofocus, shall we say. And that's not less of an issue. So therefore, the design criteria has become much more easier or wider for the lens designers to create new types of lenses.
Yeah. And I love that, it's a lens that's kind of opening up the possibilities for people that might not have looked this way before because of the price, because of the cost and of all the other things kind of attached to it. So it's really nice that this is a kind of affordable entry into this kind of photography.
Yeah. Again, it's... We really need to give more customers a wider range of lenses. We focused a lot with the R3 on our roadmap, that we wanted to have all the lenses kind of available for ready for sale start. And now we are looking at expanding out into lenses more for the R6 and the RP, etc., to have more flexible lenses for a wider range of users who aren't necessary kind of professional sports photographers, should we say.
Yeah, of course. And there's lots of them out there. So let's talk about the RF 16mm f2.8 STM. This is the ultra-wide lens. Now, this is a completely different type of lens. Why would I choose this lens over, say, the RF 14-35mm f/L4 ISUSM?
I think, obviously, there's two valid things, which obviously, A, money, and B, size. This is a very compact, small, lightweight lens, So it's... If you needed to travel around with something on the camera, it's a fraction of the weight. It's about 200 grams. It's a very, very kind of, it's about almost the same size as a 50mm 1.8 in size. So a very compact, very nice lens. Again, if you, if you want to vlog as well, it's very easy to hand hold because it's so lightweight and so compact. Yeah, it's just a lovely little kind of travel lens that, not everyone wants to carry around zoomed all the time. It's a nice little portable lens at a low cost.
This is quite uncommon in the full frame market, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything quite the same as this. There's been lots of sort of small lenses, but they've always been for APS-C, but this is kind of a nice little lens. And I think, some of these guys that we talked to, they always want like a small lens that goes on the body, because then you can put the camera away in a bag, and rather than having a lens cap, you have a small lens on there that you can then pull out and the camera's ready to go to do something. Because there's nothing worse than you see a moment, you pull the camera out of the bag and you have to put the lens on and it's all gone. If you've got a lens on it, you're ready to go. Or say, so having a very nice compact lens of different styles is kind of really beneficial. But it also goes very nice with the RP. in size and body weight.
Yeah, absolutely. So is it fair to say that there's nothing quite like either of these two lenses in the RF range?
Not at the moment, no. There's nothing else in that. They are, again, part of the RF kind of philosophy of creating new type of lenses rather than just going down the old route of producing the same old thing that we had in the EF mount for the RF mount, but actually trying new types of lenses for new types of users. The world is changing what people need, you know. So having a longer zoom is beneficial in a post-COVID world, but also vlogging, etc. is now, you know, every day, you know, people are creating more and more video content. So having a lens that's great for video, that's compact, that they can handhold, shoot themselves or family on a small body. Again, these are all kind of criteria that a couple of years ago didn't exist and weren't really thought about. So we're having to adapt our lenses to suit the changing kind of, you know, world.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. It's all about expanding the kind of the lens range for a wider range of users. I really, really like that. Now, earlier this year, Canon launched the RF 400mm f2.8L ISUSM and RF 600mm f4L ISUSM. And we've already seen some pretty amazing imagery taken with them. But what I want to know is why using these lenses of the R3 will offer photographers even more possibilities at these focal lengths.
Well, these lenses were launched obviously with the R3 in mind. Again, we want to expand, you know, with events like the Olympics and et cetera coming up, we knew that these sort of lenses would be vital. So they were kind of, you know, brought out. We took the lens designs from our EF versions because the EF versions had already been designed by the same team working on the RF lenses at the same time. They were worked on simultaneously. So they actually contained many of the RF kind of fundamentals deep in the systems, so they were easy to adapt. And when you're talking about these type of lenses, the difference for designing these type of lenses for a mirrorless or for a DSLR, there's no difference basically. If you started with a blank piece of paper, you'd probably almost end up with the same idea for both type of systems. So
yeah,
there's no need to reinvent the wheel, shall we say. But what we really did was to introduce a new sort of system that we've with the R3, which is the dual power system. So these lenses allow us to provide more power to the motors than previously with the EF system. So we can actually drive those big ring motors faster than we could with the EF version. So we can actually increase the focusing speed when used with the R3 compared to the EF versions on a 1DX Mark III.
Mike, thank you for that brilliant insight into the accompanying lenses and the R3. I think I'm going to let you take a bit of a breather now while I talk to our other guests, in case there's anything else you want to quickly say.
Hello, Mum.
Okay, now I'm pleased to say that we have two incredibly experienced photographers joining us who'll be able to give us some insight into what the R3 is like to use. Now, we have Vladimir Rees, a motorsports photographer who's been specializing in Formula One since 2005. He's built a reputation for capturing the sport in a distinctive and artistic way, and his work has been honored in his native Czech Republic, Germany, and Italy. And calling us from the UK is Richard Heathcote. Now, Richard has been shooting sports for more than 20 years, covering everything from tennis and football to rugby. And in 2019, he was named the British Sports Photographer of the Year by the British Sports Journalism Awards for his stunning and quite literally impactful shot of the rematch between boxers Andy Ruiz Jr. and Anthony Joshua. And Richard recently returned from Tokyo, having covered the 2020 Olympic Games. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi, Lucy.
Hello.
Hello. How are you both?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Can't complain.
Yeah, good, thanks.
Excellent. Well, it's lovely to have you on the show. Now, you're both used to shooting with the 1DX Mark III and the R5. So what were your first impressions of the new camera, of the R3, when you picked it up and looked through that viewfinder?
No, for me, the first impression was I was amazed by the speed, really. You know, it's you get a new camera in your hands and suddenly I pushed the shutter release and I didn't know how many pictures I took. Was it 2 pictures or was it 32 pictures? You know, so that was the first impression and I was quite amazed. And following that, obviously, when you use it in action and you are starting, you shoot cars and stuff like that or fast moving objects. It's pretty impressive to see how far the technology went in the last couple of years.
What about you, Richard?
For me, the first thing, obviously, when I get my hands on a camera that early is sort of the ergonomics of it and how it feels, how it looks, and the two most important things I think when you first get a camera is, does it feel familiar? And like Mike was talking about before, it feels like it's not too dissimilar from a 1DX Mark III. It's got fantastic ergonomics. The viewfinder is absolutely amazing. One of the biggest things for me has always been, we all love, shooting with that optical viewfinder. It's the thing we've done for years and years and we're used to. And the hardest thing for a mirrorless camera is replicating or even be able to get close to replicating an optical viewfinder electronically. And the size of the EVF, just the physical actual size of it and how it feels when you put your eye to it, just the quality of it was really, really kind of encouraging and really impressive. And those were the two things that initially stood out for me.
Yeah. So, Vlad, you've used the R3 on an e-rally car shoot and during a Formula One race as well. So can you talk us through your experiences of using the camera in these two different scenarios?
Oh, so the first time I used the camera was shooting electric rally car in Austria, as you mentioned. That was quite good fun because we were shooting the car in conditions with dust and dirt and it rained at some point as well quite heavily. So, to see the camera, the performance of the camera under these conditions and obviously in the rain where we shoot with Canon for so many years and we are used to weather sealing on the cameras and it's been quite a standard for Canon already, but it was quite impressive to have this kind of technology and the speed and, as Richard and Mike mentioned, everything put into a camera body that you are used to, the ergonomics of the camera and how it sits in your hand and hand in hand with the technology, with the speed, with the autofocus and with the frame rate. It was quite a good fun, to be fair. And Formula One was really, really a good fun. I mean, it's a new camera. You need to get used to some stuff. But as Mike mentioned before, you can have a camera from 1980s, Canon camera from 1980s, and suddenly you get the R3 in your hands and the handling is like you use your instinct. And instinctively, you want to change something and you go like, okay, I'll try this. And it works, but because it's Canon and it's intuitive, the handling and everything. So, you need a little bit of time to get used to it. But you know how Canon works and you know where the buttons are. So you just need to adapt your style a little bit to it and then bang on. You are back to where you were with Mark III DX, for example.
Yeah. So when you're kind of, on the front line working, how important is that familiarity?
Very important because mostly you use your camera without even thinking. It's like an extension of your hand, really. And there's moments where you are focused on the action in front of you and you just, or the cloud comes in and you just change the shutter speed without even thinking about it, If you have a camera that you handle and you control without even needing thinking about it so much and being focused on the action in front of you or on framing of the picture, that's really what a photographer needs.
Yeah, of course. And a camera that's able to adapt to different shooting scenarios, like we've just discussed, Formula One to an e-rally car shoot, So it's just something that, it features on the camera, something that's second nature to the user.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And obviously on the R3, you can also customize all the controllers and everything, all the buttons on the camera. You can customize everything, so it's great tool and great step forward.
Yeah. Now, Richard, as an agency photographer, you encounter a number of different assignments in your day-to-day work. Are there any particular situations where the R3 will make a difference?
I mean, we're coming out of it now with crowds returning into grounds, but one of the things that was picked up was certain locations in athletics, like the hammer throw and discus throw, where the sport organisers were very much concerned about like the noise coming from traditional shuttered cameras. Was it going to put the athletes off because there's no crowd noise?
Yeah.
There's no distracting noise in the background. All they can hear is the cameras firing off. So I was thinking, oh, well, we must put a mirrorless camera down there. It has to be mirrorless. And in the end, there was a bit of to and fro, and we did actually end up sticking with Mark IIIs because we could do. But it's scenarios and situations like that. It's I shoot quite a lot of golf, and I've been using the R5 a lot on that. or I've been using the 1DX Mark III, but using it in live view because you can't, you've got zero sound to it. Using the R3 will be a massive change. You'll just be able to, you'll be able to get pictures that you'd normally, you wouldn't be able to, mm-hmm. pictures that you would think, you have to think twice about here. Am I going to get a picture of that being noticed or not?
Yeah.
So the silent shutter part of it is obviously, I mean, that's the biggest benefit, well, one of the biggest benefits of moving to a mirrorless system.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, the others is, I mean, also like the volume and in terms of, you know, shifting pictures and getting pictures out there. I think back in Rio, we set ourselves a target of getting an image from the 100 meter final to a client in under a minute, which we achieved. Whoa. And for Tokyo, we set ourselves the target of halving that, going in under 30 seconds.
Wow.
And we achieved that.
Yeah.
We had, you know, from the moment the picture was taken to the moment it's sitting on, you know, not one client, all clients available on a certain feed,
yeah.
was under 30 seconds. And in fact, we actually weren't just under 30 seconds. We absolutely smashed that target. When you start thinking about, you know, when you move to, when you move on to shooting at 30 frames a second from traditionally, what, 15, 16 frames per mm-hmm. second, you start thinking about volume. So, you know, as an example, we, in COVID times, we had less photographers at the 100 meter final. So we had eight in the stadium, and we had 14 remotes. So you're talking, what's that, 22 cameras. Even if you just pick the, say, 5 seconds of the 100 meters, like the closing 30 meters, crossing the line in the early sellies, that's, you're talking not far off about 2,000 frames in that 5 seconds. Mm. If you then move on to doubling that, you know, 30 frames per second, you're talking 4,000 frames. And then you're talking, you know, like a file size increase as well, obviously, moving from the Mark III up to the R3. Yeah. We're talking a 20% increase in file size, roughly. You know, so then you, if you have an editor at the other end picking up pictures, they've got to find those quick pictures mm-hmm. and then move them on. So, it's all about, there's a very fine balance about, you know, what we as an agency need and use from a camera is very, very different to, say, like an individual freelancer who is not looking at speed and time.
Yeah, of course.
Looking at, you know, processing, but picking their pictures later after a session and things like that. So it's what was very good was there was a few scenarios that cropped up. Like some of the guys that were shooting beach volleyball.
Yeah.
It was so hot down on the court and so bright that they couldn't see the back of the camera. So actually being able to do image review in a viewfinder,
mm-hmm.
they could image review in the viewfinder. So, you know, because you're putting your eye up against the back of the R3, you can see the image perfectly. You can check it, the sharpness, check your composition, it's the right frame, and you can still send it away. So it's actually, you know, from that perspective as well, it's there's a lot of advantages jumping forward, you know, as the new features and to new cameras come on board.
Yeah, yeah. So I can tell there's a handful of features there that are going to really bolster the way you work and complement the way you work, actually.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. It's getting used to the way the focus works as well. As Mike said, the eye control focus is something some people are going to like, some people are not. Some mm. people are going to get used to it quickly and use it. Some people will stick to traditional ways of single point or slightly expanded point because that's the way they've always done it. I think what's really impressive about this camera and the way the new autofocus system is the fact that, you know, it gives you options. You know, you can use the camera exactly the same way or almost the same way as you could use your Mark III.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have used almost every other previous, you know, EOS One series camera. In terms of, you know, like the focus options are there, but you know, you now have new options that you can think, okay, well, I can experiment. Oh, I like this. I like this setting for this particular sport. Okay, well, this setting works really well for this sport, but it might not for that one, but that's fine because I can use the face detect for this. Or, you know, a sport where you only have one or two athletes in, the eye detect, the face detect, it absolutely nails every time.
Yeah.
It doesn't miss. If you get your starting AF point on the person you want, it really doesn't lose them. It's fantastic. You know, and it's you can really rely on it and you can really, you know, have confidence in it, which as a professional photographer, you can't afford to, you have to have 100% trust in the equipment that you're using, which is why you find a lot of photographers have a certain way of working and they stick to that.
Yeah.
So when new technology comes along, sometimes they're a bit wary of it until they've had the chance to sit and play and had the chance to really engage with what's on offer to them. So it's everyone who, we had the ability to test the camera and to try the camera was absolutely raving about how reliable and how formidable the new autofocus system is.
Yeah. And I think that key word right there, Richard, reliability, like so important. Now, you mentioned the 30 frames per second and shooting with that. I want to ask you, Vlad, how did the ability to shoot at 30 frames per second with full autofocus change the way you work?
Oh, massively. I mean, it gives you such more room to play around and minimize the ability or the possibility of losing a picture, really. So, and especially in a sport like Formula One, where everything happens so fast, you sometimes need to be very fast. And going up from, I think R5 was like around 20 frames a second, so going up to 30 frames a second, where Mark III was at around 12, 14 frames a second, I think. So it's a massive step forward and gives you so much more room to be satisfied with the outcome, really, and not miss a shot at the end of the day. So it's a big step forward, and it's quite impressive.
Yeah, well, I guess a fraction of a second can make all the difference, as Richard was saying, between, success and failure, whatever genre you're kind of shooting in. So I guess lightning fast performance is going to help you capture those shots that you haven't really quite seen before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you have to be prepared for that shot anyway in advance. But it's absolutely giving you so much more room to be even more creative and risk more. And I think the possibility that you're going to miss the picture is much, much, much smaller now with these frame rates.
Now, the R3 also gives you the opportunity to shoot at a top shutter speed of 1/64,000th of a second. What kind of shots does that enable you to capture that were impossible before?
Oh, for me personally, this feature is one of my favorite features on the R3 because it gives you. I was saying that funny story with Mike when he first gave me the camera. Before he gave it to me, actually, I was speaking about the shutter speed with him, and then I said to him I'd love to see a camera that's faster than 8,000 of a second. And Mike said to me, "We have 64,000 on this one." I was like, I'm not speaking about ISO. I'm speaking about the shutter speed. And he was like, "Yeah, me as well."
Yeah.
And I was like, "What?" And then in real, when I tried that, I was just amazed. Yeah. And for me, especially in Formula One, there's so many corners, like blind corners, where you shoot without the car seeing coming. You just shoot by the noise of the car, so you hear the car come in, and you are most of the time also very close to the car. That's why you don't see it. And having such a fast shutter speed just gives you the option and the frame rate, 30 frames a second, to shoot and completely different shots. So you can use angles, blind angles you couldn't shoot before, you couldn't use before, and creating new, brand new images you were not able technically to capture before.
Yeah. So it's opening up the creative realms of possibility. I love that. What about you, Rich? What kind of shots does this enable you to capture that were impossible before?
I think for me, it's more about it's about freezing that, ultimately freezing that action as much as possible. If you think of something like canoe slalom, where you've got the water splashing up all over the place around the face, we'd always try to freeze it, because that's where you get the most impact of the water just coming, just separating, and you get that amazing shapes of the water that kind of creates. And the faster you can freeze it, the more, even more, incredible shapes it's going to make, especially if it's reacting with faces, bouncing off of faces, bouncing off of paddles and canoes, and things for use. Here's like a proper real world use of the high shutter speed and the 30 frames a second is something like swing sequence, like sequences. So say like a golfer swing sequence. Mm-hmm. That's even at 20 frames a second, you're missing a part of the swing. that you don't get. Mm-hmm. Whereas 30 frames a second, you're getting all of the correct parts of the swing that a client or someone wants to see. But then when you've got 30 frames a second, if you're in one spot and you've got a beautiful sequence all the way through, we then have clients that then take those individual still frames and they build an animated GIF from it.
Yeah.
And they use that for all their social media accounts. And you can do that with things. You can do it with golf, you can do it with tennis, you can do it with anything that you want, like a sequence from.
Yeah.
And that's something that's again, like that's a real world end use. That is is an advantage of that high shutter speed and that 30 frames a second.
Yeah, and being able to create content essentially for different platforms from the same action.
Totally. Cool. And at the end of it all, it's kind of like we're professional photographers. We have clients. We have people that want content from certain stuff. So instead of them using video grabs, which is what previously they would do, we now can give them a much superior quality end product. Instead of someone grabbing off a video grab, which is traditionally most of the time shot relatively wide angle, quite a lot of depth of field, not really much massively paying attention to kind of the light so much. If we, as photographers were doing it, if you've got an extremely high shutter speed, that means we can use those really narrow depth of field, even in quite bright light, throw the backgrounds out, really make the subject pop. And, because we're, using that and creating that more, and then obviously you're giving them a full size file that they can use at whatever they want. Whereas like a grab off a video still is a much smaller resolution.
It sounds incredible. Now, Vlad, it's the first EOS camera to feature vehicle tracking autofocus. Mike mentioned it earlier, but how effective was it in detecting and following the high speed cars? How did you find it?
Oh, it was great. I mean, it was very impressive. Suddenly, after a few shots, I realized I can leave the autofocus to the camera and just focus on framing and composing the picture, which is first time in my career, really. Focusing was at least half of the process of photographing fast cars. But now you can really lock on with the vehicle tracking, lock on to the car and just leave it to the camera and just focusing on framing the image, which is a completely different way of working. And it was quite impressive. I mean, I was amazed, and I really enjoyed that. It was a lot of fun, and I think a lot of motorsport photographers, and not only as Richard mentioned, there's other sports also with people tracking and stuff. You can use it as well. That works perfectly the same as the vehicle tracking, and you can really play around with it, and it's a great fun for the photographers, I think, using this.
Yeah, it must have been quite refreshing for you then to take a step out of your process and then focus on framing.
No, absolutely, because there's a lot of occasions where even the conditions are not great, and to get it right, focus right. I was now in Belgium, for example, last weekend, where the race was technically cancelled due to rain because it rained for hours, and to get a picture in conditions like this, where you can't really, because your front lens is covered by water, and your viewfinder is full of water and stuff like that. So if you leave it to the camera and the camera just does the job and it's always pin sharp, it's much more easier for us photographers out there to shoot with technology like that.
Yeah, of course. Now, the new sensor, it virtually eliminates rolling shutter distortion. Is that something that you've noticed, Vlad?
No, I haven't really noticed anything with the rolling shutter effect. I've been shooting with a camera at the whole Grand Prix in Silverstone, British Grand Prix. I shot at about 6,000-7,000 frames over the weekend, and I didn't really notice any rolling shutter effects. So this is one of the things you just instantly forget, that is with the R3, because you don't see any pictures like that, which is amazing. That's great.
Yeah. What about you, Richard?
We did some quite extensive tests to try and see if we could find it or break, essentially break it. Say, look, here you go. Look, I found some rolling shutter. It had nails. It's like 99.9% of things you shoot, you just don't see it. I mean, and it goes, fortunately, I was shooting some bits and pieces and trying the animal tracking with a pair of where I live, we're quite lucky. There's a lot of red kites in the area, and there's like a pair literally fighting each other. I could almost sit in my back garden and see it. And I mean, I've seen them do it many times before, and I've kind of never quite nailed it. It's always kind of, I'll get a one or two frames, but it's kind of like you'd always miss one or two, or you'd miss that frame you'd really think about. It's all fantastic. And it was actually with the RF 400-28 and the R3, and you know, because you could just let the AF do its thing, you know, the whole screen sensor, just go with it. Absolutely grabbed, you know, I mean, a whole sequence of maybe 30-35 frames, every single one sharp. The birds were all over the place in the frame. They weren't central because I'm hand holding the 400-28. And this is the other thing, like the weight reduction in the camera body, because there's no, you know, as Mike put it when we were testing, was like, you know, there's no paperweight in the camera body. The first thing when you pick the camera up, you're thinking like, oh, this is light. Is it as strong? Is it as well built as a 1DX Mark III? Well, actually, it is. It is. You just forget that, you know, there's 500 grams or whatever it is missing that is the mirror, that is the prism and the mirror box, because it's not needed. So again, you know, when you're shooting a long time, when you're hand holding cameras for a long time, and that weight isn't there anymore, it means you can. You don't get as tired.
Can
hold the camera longer. You can spend longer concentrating on getting the subject that you want.
You don't get that handshake.
Yeah, you know, and getting the picture. You don't get that. And again, these are all things that previously would be a factor in you know your tiredness and the weight of the stuff, and it would affect the picture. And you know, it would also then, you know, showing things like rolling shutter and things like that, it'd just be another factor. And so for, you know, thing, you know, all these, like Mike said, small little things as professional photographers, massive jump is fantastic, but it's always the little increments. It's always the little things that add up together that give us the overall, feeling of confidence, the overall feeling of like, yeah, no, this is good. We like this. We like that. You know, most of the time when we're giving feedback, it's kind of like, well, we like this, but it'd be nice if we did this, or this is good, but and it's always tweaks. It's always little things here, little tweaks there, little
fine, you know,
little backwards and forwards, kind of. Exactly. And that's something that, you know, I think a lot of people, when they get their hands on an R3, will see that, oh yeah, there's a lot of familiarity, but there's a lot of fantastic advantages and a lot of bonuses to using this camera.
Awesome. And you've just listed a lot of them. Now, Rich, we touched on workflow and how important this is to you a while ago, but having the most efficient workflow possible is very important to an agency photographer like yourself. So is the R3 going to be an improvement in that regard? Have you got anything else to add in that kind of area?
I think the good thing is that, you know, like the menu system is almost identical. You know, it's, you can pick up any Canon camera. The menu system is just easy to use. It's very straightforward. You know, the improvements made with FTP and transmission with the 1DX Mark III obviously translated straight over to the R3, which is fantastic. We, you know, the ability to, pretty much set up different FTP connections if you need them fast is good. And for us, it's about, there's key things when, you need to be able to voice capture a picture, and you need to be able to, lock that file, and you need to be able to transmit it fast. So the editors on the other end, you know, because most of the time, you know, especially now in the last 18 months or so, our editors aren't sitting with each other. They're sitting at home.
Yeah, of course.
They're working collectively, but they're all online. So be able to give them the salient information about the picture that they're getting fast, and for them be able to get that information and, you know, not have to mess around, not have to message us back. Yeah, be able to, you know, voice caption pictures whilst transmitting. It's such a key important part of a camera now. And if you think if we go back before digital, you know, we were processing film. The camera did one job. It took pictures, and it did really, really well. Now the camera, not only does it have to take pictures, but it's a communication device, and it's a full-on network communication device.
Yeah.
And it has to do that job as well as it takes pictures. So, you know, with the improvements in the LAN port, the fact that we now, the WFT is essentially built into the body. There's no external WFT anymore. you know, that's another port that potentially isn't going to get soaked, or, you know, water can't get in when it's pouring down a rain, or knocked off or damaged or lost if people take the moron off all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just about having a reliable, robust piece of equipment, and that's something that, you know, so far in use, it's definitely proving to be.
Yeah, it just sounds incredibly efficient. You sound incredibly efficient anyway, but this is something that's just kind of taking that to the next level, enabling you to capture, get images over to anyone you need to in any corner of the planet, and do so reliably and quickly. So Vlad, I need to ask you, what did you make of the camera's body and the change in the size and weight?
Oh no, I mean, as I mentioned before, the robust and ergonomic handling of this camera brings us back to what we were used to, you know, with Mark II, Mark IIIs. And it's slightly lighter, so the handling is much easier. But at the same time, it's a robust thing that sits in your hand firmly, and you need that when you're out there. So business as usual for Canon, the handling and everything. And at the same time, you get an amazing technology. You get a tool with amazing technology inside. Even when I listen to Mike, me as a photographer, I don't know all these technical details, you know, but when I listen to Mike saying that the camera can double check every image, you know, shot within a second, so that's 30 images, that two double checks or one double check on each image, so it's 60, you know, things that the camera processes at the same time, and adapting the AF to the object, so that's pretty impressive. And it's a great fun, and it's just a brand new era and new technology within a robust camera body that you are used to. You used instinctively as the cameras before, you know. So it's not a really new thing for me as a Canon photographer. The handling and controlling of the camera is pretty much the same. You use your instinct, and it's very intuitive, everything. So it's great. I mean, you are using a brand new camera with tools you are used to. So, it's great, and I can't wait to be working with this camera.
Yeah. So what lenses have you been using, and how did they perform with the new camera?
I've been using some prime lenses, 50mm 1.2, 85mm f1.2 as well, and 400 and 600 millimeters lenses along telephotos. The handling was great. The autofocus was much faster than the Mark IIIs, for example, and very, very sufficient. You could really rely on it. And it was just fun. As I said, as a photographer, I was more and more relying on the camera in terms of focusing, and was more and more focusing on the composition and on the framing of the picture.
Yeah. So Richard talked about how he used the camera, you know, handheld. You obviously shoot a lot of handheld. So did the in-body image stabilization really help?
It did. I mean, some photographers, as Richard mentioned, you know, some photographers stick to their old workflow, let's say, they are used to. But I think if you start trying this new technology in the field, and you start believing in this and relying on this new technology, and you start understanding how your shooting style can use this new technology in action, and how you can adapt your style to it, or adapt the camera to your style, it's just a great fun. And there's a lot of little tools, a lot of little tweaks, or things you can customize on the R3, which makes your job so much easier and gives you so much more creative room to play in. I think it's quite amazing. And it's a brand new era, and it's a great, massive step forward for Canon, I think.
Yeah. Richard, have you got anything to add about the in-body stabilization when you're shooting handheld?
I think one of the things that, in fact, it's something we started playing with, all were massively impressed when first got hands on an R5, and obviously it's only improved and got better with the R3, was the ability to literally almost sit and take a picture handheld half a second when we were messing around and sort of like playing games with each other, so you get the slowest.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, like, you're taking a you know, with a bit of practice, you're doing a handheld picture with 1 second. 1 second. Mm-hmm. Just think about that. You're getting a frame, razor sharp, 1 second exposure, and that's a little extreme sometimes, but that ability to say when you're in extremely low light, or you need a certain effect through the exposure because you want movement, but you need to have, obviously you always need to have elements of the frame sharp and still, you've got confidence in that ability. You know, if you all of a sudden you need to get an angle and you're using 400 or a 6 and you can't get your monopod down or something like that, and you need to hand hold it, but you're shooting like a 30th of a second or a 15th of a second, and you need it razor sharp, you've got the confidence is there.
Yeah.
The combination of the lens and the in-body stabilization to know that you're eliminating that camera shake out of it.
Yeah, which is unbelievably important. Now, guys, we spoke about how you guys found the electronic viewfinder, and you guys are clearly massive fans of that. And we kind of touched on it briefly, but what did you really think? What did you think of the eye control focus when you were using it?
So I remember a long, 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 long time ago, one of my first film cameras was an EOS 5,
yeah.
The original one with the very first eye focus before the EOS 3. So when Mike said to me that it was, or alluded to it, it was obvious that it was coming back. I was like, I remember that. I remember it being a little bit of fun, but, you know, interesting to see.
Yeah.
So I was very keen to use it, very keen to see what it came out like. And we tried it on multitude of subjects from like a football match, training, various other things. And I think it's one of these things that you definitely have to get used to.
Yeah.
You definitely have to be open to the technology, and you have to practice. You have to, you're not going to use it just out of the box. It's something you're going to have to play with. Mm-hmm. It's something you're going to have to see if it's for you. It definitely 100% lets you concentrate more on framing. It's odd. You would think that you would stop concentrating on your framing, you'd be concentrating on where you're looking at and the subject, but I've just found myself concentrating, being able to get my framing even better than I normally would do, and be able to look at the subject look where I want the picture to be shot, mm-hmm. we should say. But again, it's something that some people are going to love, some people will not like. But then, like I said before, it's another new feature that people will embrace and play with, or they will think, not sure about that, but I'll try it.
Yeah.
And that's all you can ever do, is encourage people, look, it's there, try it.
Because exactly.
You might like it. And if you like it, you might find it makes your life easier. So.
Yeah, it can completely recalibrate how people work. And like you said, it might not be for everyone. And the great thing is there are other options to dive into and use. What about you, Vlad? What did you think of the eye control focus?
Well, for me, when Mike first told me about it, and we used it in the field, and we calibrated my eye to it, and we played around a little bit with it, I was like, for me, it was like a science fiction movie a little bit. I mean, you were controlling a camera with your eye, you know, it's like, the AI is already like doing its way into this technology, and I think this technology is the technology of the future as well. It's going to be improving with every new camera. It's going to be improving, and this is going to be a standard, I think, in a few years' time. And it might not be for every photographer at the moment. You have to get used to it, and you have to play around with it a little bit, and really. Trust into this technology. But I think if you kind of adapt to it, and if you get used to it, it's the future, and it's going to help you in many occasions, you know, when you are in the field, again, concentrating just on the picture, on framing the picture and composing the picture, and leave the autofocus to the camera again.
Yeah, you're right by saying it's quite sci-fi, isn't it? It's such an unbelievably cool feature that complements different shooting scenarios. I think it's something that a lot of people are going to have a lot of fun with. Now, staying in this kind of realm of autofocus, can you talk us through how you've set up the autofocus and how it's performed in different situations?
Richard, go ahead.
So initially, I think it's like, the first thing you do is kind of think, okay, well, how do I use my R5? How do I use a 1DX Mark III? Let's just put it on that. Let's just try it on that first. Just so you get a bit of a benchmark, so you kind of get like, okay, yeah, that's fine. And then you start kind of exploring it's obviously got the auto case, same as the Mark III, which seems to work very well. Again, I'm not someone who just uses one, right? I only use AF a certain way. I use it a different way for each subject. So if I'm shooting football, rugby, similar sports like that, I would be front button focus. On the 1DX Mark III, I would use like an expanded zone, or I would use like the slightly larger zones and let the face detector work within that. So I would set the same thing up with the R3 within a box, because you have the ability to subject track regardless of the AF zone you're using. That for me was just a touch confusing, or it wasn't quite how I wanted the camera to work for how I would want to shoot. So again, I was using face detect or eye detect, right through in the zone that I want to use it on. And I would actually move that zone around with the manual joystick on the back. But if I'm shooting boxing, I then use the smart controller, because I find I can set zones either side and I can just literally swipe my thumb across that smart controller and it's just flicking from spot to spot or side to side ridiculously fast whenever I need it to. But then I go to other sports, say something like golf and other things like that, then I will switch to back button focus, and I use back button focus on the AF on button, and then and shutter release on the shutter button. I think it's because it's just the natural way that I shoot that sport. And I think that's always been the massive benefit of all the Canon cameras, and especially the new mirrorless ones, where you can, like Vlad said before, you can completely customize almost any button on the camera to almost do pretty much whatever you want it to. That means you can find your favorite way of using it. I think you still have to pick the right AF pattern for the sport that you want to shoot or the subject that you want to shoot. Some things work for some things, and like what might work for a 400mm doesn't work for a 70-200 at the same sport. If you're shooting football, then you could, on your long lens on your 400mm, you can use a wider AF pattern. You get more confident with the way that works and happy. But when it comes to the short lens and the goal mouth and goals and celebrations, I want my AF point in a certain position, so it's exactly where I want it. So you know what? If I get it wrong, that's on me. But I'm 100% confident that I'm putting that AF spot on the person I want it, or the place I want it to be, because that's the person shooting at goal, or that's the person celebrating. I don't want it to, say all of a sudden, goal mouth scramble, you could have, 4, 10, 15 players. In that situation, then face and eye detect can naturally, it might just jump onto someone else. You don't want it to. You want it to be where you want it. And the same with the celebration, you got, if it's one player running it, you're fine. But often it's not. Often it's 5 or 6 players where you need to be on the goal scorer. You need it and to stay on the goal scorer. It's experimenting with a camera. So, you're using its maximum potential to what you're shooting.
Yeah. But ultimately what we're talking about here is really reliable autofocus options and top-notch performance. What about you, Vlad? Have you got anything to add to that?
Well, for me personally, I would say all the way up to the Mark IIIs, I would probably consider myself as one of the conservative guys using just one AF point and moving that around as needed, and then using the rear button for the AFs. And with the R3, I would say I took it slowly. I was using first the zones, a variety of different AF zones, and then moving up to the vehicle tracking and people tracking and all this kind of stuff. And then I would always use my personal setup would be I would always use the rear button for the AF, because every now and then I also focus manual in between if needed. because out of the reason I need to suddenly either see something in the background I want to focus on or something in the foreground, you know. And I find it faster if I do it just in MF. But relying slowly more and more on the R3 technology and seeing what the R3 can do with vehicle tracking and people tracking and animal tracking and all this kind of stuff is just quite amazing. I think the mind setup of me as a photographer is changing as well slowly, you know, and working more and more with the R3, I think it will be changing as well and will be more giving trust into this camera and into the AF system. And eventually I will find the right setup for me and for the sport I'm shooting. I guess it's a normal procedure for every photographer, you know. Everybody needs to kind of find his own settings and setup and what works for him or not and adapt to it. But if you use all these new features like eye detection or vehicle tracking and all this kind of stuff, it's just, I mean, you just need to trust more and more into this technology because it's the future, really.
Yeah, yeah. Would you say vehicle tracking is a bit of a game changer for you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, as I say, it was like the focusing was always like many times, you know, in the old days when you were shooting film or you know, even like first digital cameras, and then there was a great shot and then you look on the back of the camera and then it was out of focus and you said, oh, shame, you know, like we've all missed so many pictures because of that, and suddenly you have a camera that just it's just pin sharp all the time. So you need to start trusting into this technology and try to believe in it and rely on it.
Yeah absolutely. And then we need to know, guys, what other features of the camera did you take advantage of? Are there any features that you really enjoyed using that maybe stood head and shoulders above others?
No, I mean, as Richard mentioned before, for me also, apart from the frame rate and from the AF speed, the viewfinder was amazing. I mean, first time I looked through it, it was like watching a home cinema at home. It was amazing. It was great. Yeah. The colors and the details of of everything you were framing, it was just great. And the resolution of the viewfinder is just great. You don't really notice that that you are, it's a digital viewfinder really. And also the live exposure setup and all this, it's just so much easier now. When you go back to the Mark III, for example, the technology looks quite behind already, you know. So you are getting used to it so fast, and you start loving it. And for me, it would be the viewfinder, I think.
Yeah. What about you, Richard?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go down the same route. It's actually one of my favourite.
That says a lot about the viewfinder.
It's just one of my, it does, and yeah, this is, you know, I know, yeah, it's, yeah, go on about something like that, but you know, it's how we interact with the camera. You look through the camera, you look through the viewfinder, you look at your subject, you use the viewfinder. It's such an important part of a mirrorless camera.
Yeah,
it really, really, really is. And I've been fortunate enough to have play with, you know, any and every professional mirrorless camera out there, and this viewfinder is head and shoulders above anything, wow. I mean, literally anything else in terms of the user experience. That's so important because it just gives you, I know it keeps going back to what we've said already, it just gives you the confidence. It just gives you that, you know, if you feel happy using something, you're not squinting, it's not keeping you, you know, we spend a long, long, long time looking through the viewfinder, a long time.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're looking through the viewfinder and we're not even taking pictures. You're just looking to see what's going on. You know, I'm shooting a football match or something like that. I'm looking through my 400mm. I'm looking at stuff down the pitch just to see what's going on. I'm not taking the picture. So, you know, with a DSLR, you're not really straining your eye because you're just looking through an optic. When you're looking through an EVF, you're kind of worried about, oh, is it tiring your eye because mm-hmm. you're focusing on something so sharp? So close to your eye. You constantly have to have the camera focusing and on. So, again, that the way the viewfinder works and the way, you know, the fact that, you know, the smoother refresh options make it nicer and easier to use. You know, it's The last thing you want as a professional is to not want to use a camera for something really small and inconsequential, like it gives you a headache because you look through an electronic viewfinder that is just making your eyes tired. You know, or if you're using a camera where the buttons aren't in the right place and it's giving you a little bit of cramp or something like that because you can't, I want to use that button, not that button. As much as these are tools, it is a tool, but it has to be, something that is comfortable to use and does the job really, really well. And it ticks all those boxes. Yeah. It really does tick all those boxes. And it's the whole package of the camera that's really, is actually probably its biggest asset, is the fact that, all together, when you add all the little features and put them together, yes, there are, this is amazing, that's outstanding. But when you put it all together, it works together.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you're not thinking like, I'm making a compromise here. I want this camera because it's got like 64,000th of a second, but the viewfinder's awful.
Yes.
Well, it's not. The viewfinder's amazing. In fact, it's like, I love this camera for the viewfinder, but you know what? If it rains, I'm going to put it away because it's going to get wet and it's going to get broken and it could cost me thousands to repair. Well, no, it's not, because it's weather sealed. It's a professional camera. Yes. So it's all, it's everything.
Yeah, like you said, it ticks all the boxes. And I'm sure the people listening can't wait to have a look through that viewfinder. You guys have made it sound incredible. One more thing, guys, battery life. Talk to me about battery life. How did you find it on the front line?
Oh, amazing. I think my feeling was it lasted longer. It's the same battery on the Mark II and Mark III. And my personal feeling was it lasted longer than on the Mark III. So, it's great because you can use your old charger and your old equipment. You don't need to buy new accessories and stuff like that. And the same cables and everything as Mike mentioned. So, but my personal feeling was it lasted much longer than on the Mark III.
Yeah. What about you, Richard? How did you find it?
It was in ideal conditions. I think when we were like, you should be able to get X amount of frames out of it, and it actually got more. It kept going a bit longer. I think you have to be realistic, maybe going into extreme conditions, because it's got an electronic viewfinder, so it probably drains a bit more. So say it'll be interesting to see how it goes under extremely cold conditions, because we know that drains battery life on every camera regardless. But the fact that you say it's the same battery, so I can walk around with a Mark III and an R3, and I haven't got to think, I need to change. I've got to take two different types of battery charger. I've got to take two different types of battery. I can just, worst case scenario, I can take a battery out of one and pop it in the other.
Yeah,
if it sounds really, it's
no, not at all.
And it definitely, in typical conditions, we were definitely getting more shots out of it per battery than we were told it should do.
Yeah.
So it's definitely lasting a little bit. That bit longer. So.
Just to add to this, it's as Richard said, it's a digital viewfinder, but at the same time, you are also shooting much, much more frames because it's a high frame rate, So there should be more battery consumption, much more battery consumption, really, energy consumption. But you don't really notice stuff like that. And I had a feeling I only charged, over the weekend, 4 days shooting, once the batteries. So I had a feeling it was much, much more efficient than on the Mark III, really. But as Richard said, you'd have to try that in like freezing conditions, and then you really see the outcome of the battery life and so on. But no, the first feeling was great. It was good.
Yeah. Now, Vlad, Rich did a great summary of his thoughts of what he thought about the camera. Now, just to kind of end things off, what are your final thoughts on the R3?
I really look forward to work with this camera in the field. And, there's a new technology and a lot of new little tweaks that will become a standard now, which we see this now as a massive step forward, but this will be a standard like in 1-2 years. And Canon's done a great job. If you compare the R5's technology, which is already great, and moving up to R3 now, it's just, I wouldn't imagine really that we can do so much improvements in such a small time frame.
Yeah.
So having this camera in my hands and shooting with this camera, it was just just a lot of fun. And I see myself as a photographer, it will give me much more space to be more creative, to not miss a shot, to play around with a lot of stuff that the camera can offer you. You know, you can if you customize it to your style, then you will have really a lot of fun shooting with this camera. And I guess most of the photographers will feel like that once they try that.
Well, it is. It's such an exciting camera. It's such an exciting release. And I think it's been fantastic to hear from you guys and how much you've enjoyed using it, hearing how the little excitement coming through in your voice and how it's opened up the realms of creativity and improved your workflow with all the kind of innovations and new features. It's been really great picking your brains. So that brings us to the end of this rather exciting episode of Shutter Stories to celebrate all things R3 and what can only be described as an absolute powerhouse of a camera with a bunch of excellent, exciting and innovative new features to boot. I'd like to take the time now to thank my guests, Vladimir Rees, Richard Heathcote, and of course, the all knowledgeable Mike Burnhill. It's been a pleasure to have you guys on the show. Thank you.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy.
Cheers, Lucy. Thank you very much.
And of course, thank you to you guys for listening. But we are not quite done with this topic yet. Mike is going to be back on the next episode of Shutter Stories, answering all of your burning questions about the new camera. So whether you want to know a bit more about how iControl AF works or how you can customize the camera, or even if you have a question about the wider EOS R system, you can find us at Canon EMEA Pro. That's at Canon EMEA Pro on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So send us your question about the R3 and Mike may just answer it on the next show on September 22nd. You don't want to miss it. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can rate and subscribe in the episode's listing. If you have any thoughts or feedback on today's episode or the podcast as a whole, why not reach out to us on social media? You'll find our details in the description below. We'd love to hear from you.